football on off the ball.
With Sky, proud partner and supporter of the Republic of Ireland women's national football team.
This is News Talk.
So, Manchester Derby, Sunday. It's a weird quirk, isn't it, that Manchester United, no matter what's going on, when they go to the Etihad, they almost always seem to turn up.
Yes, it is a weird quirk because Manchester City have been the preeminent team in the Premier League the last few years, but Manchester United's results at the Etihad have surprised all, and some of the best performances in recent seasons have been in that fixture. I don't know why. I know that each of the games has been approached in a different manner, and Manchester United have done their tactical homework. So last season, for example, where Anthony Martial, another surprise in that game, was man of the match, Manchester United decided to press high on Manchester City. They knew that City would break their lines. They knew that they would need a bit of luck, and that Manchester City have got players who were capable of scoring from almost anywhere, but the United players did really well and they got a bit of luck and they got yet another win. Looking at the league table now, it seems equally improbable this time that Manchester United are going to get another win. I'm not too optimistic. I don't think Manchester United have been playing particularly well. And just look at the league table. There's a 19-point gap there after 27 games. It is a gulf. It's massive.
In terms of what tactical surprise they could come up with this week, like you've seen every game under Ralf Rangnick, have there been any tactical surprises? Has there been anything you've seen that you weren't quite expecting? Or have you even seen what maybe you were expecting from Ralf Rangnick?
I think in his first game, I saw what we were expecting and what we were told to expect. That was a 4-2-2-2-2-2-2-2. And for 25 minutes against Crystal Palace, I think it worked really well. I think Ralf Rangnick's United team doesn't concede too many goals. If you look at the points per game total, it's not bad. It's certainly an improvement on the last 6 or 7 weeks under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. The fact that Manchester United are in fourth is to Ralf Rangnick's credit. United have really struggled to overcome teams near the bottom of the table. And Ralf Rangnick has had a favourable run of fixtures, and yet United have been unable to beat teams lower down in the league, Newcastle, Burnley, for example. And there's been several of them, most recently Watford at Old Trafford on Saturday in a 0-0 draw. And I think he's reverted to type because the players are more comfortable playing a 4-2-3-1, which was favoured for the most part by Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Does it always convince? Not at all. Has there been times where it's looked really worrying? Absolutely. In Madrid last week, I thought Manchester United were atrocious in the first half, but they picked up a little bit in the second, and the substitutions were smart ones by the manager. And Anthony Langer got an equaliser, which cheered up the 3,500 fans singing up in the away end, and have kept Manchester United in the tie. So Rangnick's doing all right, and if he gets United into fourth, I think he will have done well. If he wins the Champions League, he would have done exceptionally well. No one can really see that happening
now
at the moment. But United have got tough fixtures coming up. One of them will be put back a month. That's because Liverpool have gone through in the FA Cup. And worryingly, Arsenal have been winning their games recently. So you've got a situation where Arsenal are six, but they're only a point or two. 2 points behind Manchester United with three games in hand, I think. So United really need to stop drawing matches, even though they're not losing matches. Because if they don't, well, there's 11 games left and it'll be too late.
You mentioned that Liverpool game then is postponed. The next three, though, are still Manchester City at the Etihad, Tottenham at Old Trafford, and then the second leg against Atletico Madrid. Part of me was wondering ahead of that Atletico game, because it was the first, I guess you could say, big team that United had played since Rangnick came in, as to whether or not maybe his style and system wasn't that suited to lesser opposition, but somehow would come alive when he's faced with some of the best players in the world, and United would have less of the ball and they could be back to being a real counter-attacking force. Is that false optimism? Was there any sign that there could be some truth in that, and that actually over the next couple of weeks we'll see a different Manchester United?
So that counter-attack side you're talking about, that was probably the strength of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's Manchester United, and that's why he got some really good results against teams like Manchester City, they'd beat them without having much of the possession. And Solskjaer's plan was for United to get more and more possession as the team improved and improved into one which was challenging for a title. That simply didn't happen. I think that Atletico was a nightmare right from the first whistle. Playing Victor Lindelof at right back was a surprise. I think he was played because the manager didn't want to drop Harry Maguire. And Atletico exploited it right from the start. So you had uncertainty about United's formation. And I asked directly 10 minutes before the game because I had to tell television viewers because I was pitch side doing my job. And I had no idea what the formation was going to be until the game started. And Atletico, with Lodi on the left, pushed right onto Manchester United. They went ahead early on. They were so much better in the first half. And what was alarming to me was this wasn't an in-form Atletico team. This was an Atletico team who were fifth in La Liga. Yes, they are the Spanish champions. They were missing five or six of their best players from that starting lineup. So that 1-1 result in Madrid is actually a very good result. Would have been even better if away goals would continue into this season. And Atletico, and I stayed in Madrid a couple of days after the game, they will be vengeful. They feel absolutely robbed by what happened in the Metropolitano last week. So I hope that Manchester United learn from that. Clearly there's very good players who can beat Atletico Madrid. Manchester United's squad is still full of top name players, but you just don't know whether they're going to turn up or not.
The results and the performances on the pitch then, not a huge amount of change in recent weeks, but also off the pitch, it's continuing in a familiar pattern with just never-ending leaks and rumours around the squad. And Harry Maguire maybe is a personality that it's difficult to have a huge amount of sympathy for. But again today, stories that he's been privately questioned by members of the Manchester United squad, that they've aired their grievances among themselves at the Carrington training ground. Some of them feel that the defender's performances did not meet the club standards. I don't remember any other squad at an elite level where so many stories seem to come out of players questioning each other and splits in the camp. It's a little bit insane what's going on at the moment.
Well, there's always been leaks and there always will be leaks because you've got 25 people and that's just the players who are privy into internal information.
Sorry, Andy, would you have found through the years that there's always leaks, but there would be leaks like this where it's players talking down other players?
No, I think there's always leaks, and when things are not going well, that's when you start to hear negative leaks like this one. That's when blame starts to be apportioned onto other people. That's when you start to hear back chat, you start to hear talks of the being cliques. So there's always been leaks, and there always will be. And because Manchester United are so newsworthy, and because of the way the modern media cycle works, it just needs to go out there. People don't really check the source of some of this for it to be digested and chewed over. And it's another episode in this soap opera of Manchester United. And sometimes I see some of the sources of information and I just think, I simply do not believe that. And with other people, I think, yeah, because I know that he knows him and et cetera. And you think there's probably something in that. But the point is that this season has been a disappointing one for Manchester United. Blame is being apportioned by different people. If not by the players, it might be by people close to the players. And some of the stuff I just see from journalists, and I'm just really circumspect about whether that's true or not. An example for me is someone said to me who was very in a pretty important position, you should be finding out who signed Fred. And he said that to me at the point when Fred was not playing well at all and was a maligned figure. So this would be November 18. So I started asking around, trying to find out, well, it was him. And there were a lot of people casting aspersions and it was quite negative. When Fred was man of the match 2 weeks later against Manchester City in probably Solskjaer's best match, people stopped coming to me and saying that. Nobody came to me and said that. And suddenly people were saying, actually, Fred's not a bad player. And there's so many versions of the truth in football and it's so subjective all the time that I'm hearing 2-3 different versions of the same event And my job as a journalist is to try and decipher that. And it's not always possible because it's just people's opinions. So Ralf Rangnick has got to deal with this and facing the British media before almost every match, and the international media for Champions League games as well. And I think he's quite honest in the way that he deals with the questions. I think he's been accused of hanging some of his players out in public, which is something Ole Gunnar Solskjaer didn't do. But I find it quite refreshing in the way that it gives you honest and intelligent answers. The problem is that there's two versions of the truth. There's been a couple of occasions recently where Ralf Rangnick has said one thing in his press conference, and the players or the players' advisors or whoever does the players' social media accounts, there's so many cooks in this, pushed back and said, actually, that's not true. And then everyone feeds off that because it's this big soap opera of Manchester United. And again, everyone's picking off on it. And when things are not going well, you just get more of this. Ferguson, he knew that there were leaks, but he was such a powerful authoritarian figure that there was less of it. And it helped that the team were winning all the time. The problem that you've got now is it's an interim manager. He's moving on at the end of the season. The players know that. They know that if they spoke out, the repercussions are probably not going to be permanent repercussions. And there's lots of shifting plates of power there. So you're going to have players who are leaving. You've had so many changes at the club, even in the last 6 months, not just Solskjaer, Michael Carrick, Kieran McKenna, Martin Purr, Ed Woodward, Charlie Brooks, head of the comms team. So right throughout the club, you're having people leaving, and they're not getting sacked apart from Solskjaer. They're leaving at their own accord. And with each departure, you get a power vacuum created, big or small. That leads to more people jockeying for position, more leaks coming out, more briefs coming out. And it's a bit of an unholy situation that you get now at Manchester United with so many negative headlines.
A lot may depend on whether Manchester United have Champions League football for what their plans for next season are. But in terms of positioning themselves to, you know, get back challenging towards the top of the league next year, both with the manager search and with a player search, who's leading that? Is that John Murtagh's gig, or is Ralf Rangnick with that 2-year contract to move behind the scenes or to move up in the club? Is he involved in all those aspects of the business as well?
John Murtagh is leading it, in answer to your question, and he will be assisted by people like Darren Fletcher. So when Ralf Rangnick was one of the managers who was interviewed for the interim role, it was those two who did the interviewing. So they spoke to 5 different candidates in total, and it will be on them. So if the new manager comes in and is a big success, they will get the credit for that. And if the new manager comes in and he's not a big success, they will get criticised for that. And there's only so many cycles that the people making the decisions can go through. As we've seen with Ed Woodward, even though he chose to leave at his own accord, he'd gone through 3 or 4 or 5 different managers without bringing a league title back to Old Trafford under his watch, without that even being close to happening. And it was time to move on. And it's the same with all of the decision makers. So at the moment, John Murtagh is in a position of power. Richard Arnold, who's his boss, will be watching him very, very closely. And his argument will be, we are giving you the tools to do your job properly. Why are we miles off the top, if indeed Manchester United are miles off the top next season? And that's just how it is at the moment. But it's such a political club in some ways. And you've seen other departures from the ones we've even mentioned. You know, Nicky Butt, I spoke to him last week. He was, and it depressed me having spoke to him, because I thought, I'd like him still working at Manchester United. And he's left. He's another one who could see the dynamics changing, and he decided to move on off his own accord. And there's good people there. I think Darren Fletcher's a good person. He's intelligent. He knows his football. But if I sound unconvincing, it's because I'm unconvinced. And I saw all the talk after the second quarter financial results this week about how Manchester United are going to do this, they're going to do that, they're going to do this. I've heard it all before. One change I did notice is Richard Arnold is delegating more. So you saw 3, 4, 5 different people speaking on behalf of Manchester United. And I think that's going to become more commonplace, so that there isn't just one person who fans can focus usually their anger on, which was Ed Woodward, but several different people who will be a point of contact for the comms and obviously the football side of things as well.
Yeah, it is hard to know what to make of all those departures, because when you're not winning, everything is questioned. And when Manchester United haven't been winning, maybe you think there needs to be a turnover of staff to bring back a winning culture. But also, if you're losing a huge amount of expertise in a very short period of time, like, that can be a setback in itself.
Yeah, and that's what's happening. And we're talking now under a cloud, because this has been a very disappointing season for Manchester United. You've got FA Cup games tonight. Manchester United are not in it because we were knocked out by a Championship team at Old Trafford after penalties. You've got a league title race. Manchester United are not in it and have not been in it at all, apart from in the first month. Champions League, Manchester United are still in it. The Carabao Cup, the final recently, Manchester United went out of that, having lost at home to West Ham. So it's been a really, really disappointing season. Especially so because when Cristiano Ronaldo and Rafael Varane and Jadon Sancho came in, expectations rose. And it wasn't unreasonable for them to rise. United finished second last season. There was showing signs of improvement. And then it just completely imploded in the autumn. And that saw the manager lose his job. And I think he understood why he lost his job. It's a club like United. You cannot be going through them type of results where I think 5 defeats in 7 matches, it was nowhere near good enough.
Looking ahead then again to Sunday and the Manchester derby, there was always seems to be the question mark for games like this. Like, does it need to be McTominay and Fred? Like, I think of the game against Liverpool where they took Pogba out on the right hand side. Again, you're just trying to squeeze them in somewhere. Do you have a feeling that Rangnick goes into a game like this now and he knows what his best 11 is?
I'm going to pause because I don't think he does. And I think he's been hesitant in naming it. You mentioned Paul Pogba. I thought it was very encouraging in the first half against Leeds United recently. That was when Manchester United scored 4 goals. That's not been happening. The team have not been scoring enough goals. They've only scored more than 1 goal at Old Trafford in, I think, 7 games since the turn of the year. I mean, come on, this is Manchester United at home. Paul Pogba, on his day, is a world-class player. Mm. He showed that at Leeds. He was fantastic, and at least for the first hour. But there's problems all over the pitch. The team have scored 44 goals. I think it's 9 less than at the same point as last season. So despite having all of these big names, Manchester in attack, Manchester United have been struggling with their forwards. I think the fans have got an idealised best 11, and that would probably be David De Gea. Rafael Varane is a player who's done well. Harry Maguire is a real point of contention for a lot of fans at the moment. We would have said for a long time that it was Aaron Wan-Bissaka and Luke Shaw, but that's gone into a state of flux this season. So Diogo Dalot's been playing at right back. Alex Telles has been featuring more at left back. Fred McTominay. Nemanja Matic has had a couple of decent games recently. So many of the positions are up for grabs, without that sounding too cliche.
Fred and McTominay get a hard time. Fair enough, they may not be the quality of midfielder of Manchester United of 10, 15, 20 years ago. But in terms of effort, in terms of actually when Manchester United playing well, them playing well, there's other targets you could pick than Fred and McTominay.
Yeah, there is, and it's a fair comment, but you said 10, 20, 30 years ago, and it's one of the biggest clubs in the world. When you've had Roy Keane in that position and Brian Robson in that position, there's going to be comparisons with those great players. You look at the fullbacks, they're good fullbacks, but other clubs have got better fullbacks, because in the Premier League now, the bar has been raised very high because of the money. Most of the clubs can go out, they can scout globally. So Manchester United cannot pick off the best talents from even clubs like Tottenham, like they used to be able to do, going to sign Michael Carrick or Teddy Sheringham. It doesn't happen like it used to do. So a gap has been closed in other ways. And I think Fred, he said it last week, he's not the most technical of players, but he does have his virtues and he has some decent matches. And then he infuriates fans by giving the ball away. And the central midfield has been an area where Manchester United have been looking to improve upon. That's why you've seen Declan Rice linked to Manchester United all of the time. And it's just another area where there's been concern. I think 6 games into this season, when the mood was very different, when Manchester United were at the top of the league, a central midfielder would have been the one position which players were looking at. Now I think you're looking at strengthen all over the pitch, which is not going to happen. You can't just get rid of a whole squad, but that shows the frustration and how underwhelming a lot of the players have been this season.
Yeah, summer's going to be fascinating because, again, the midfield is still an issue and Declan Rice will be a big focus. If there's doubts about Harry Maguire, a centre-back in area once again, like full-backs are the most important position of the pitch right now. And also the various problems with attacking players and Cavani looking like he's going to leave, Cristiano Ronaldo may leave. Like, that in itself could be a 200 million job trying to repair the attack, which was the area they thought they were strongest in.
Exactly, and that's my earlier point. It's an area where Manchester United are struggling to score goals. Anthony Martial has gone out on loan. He was not having a good season. Marcus Rashford's not had a good season. Anthony Elanga's come in, and he's been one of the few bright points of recent times. It's a real shame about Edinson Cavani because he finished last season so strongly. And when he's played this season, he's played well. And Manchester United's best performance this season was probably Tottenham away in October. When two played up front, Cavani and Ronaldo, and Ronaldo's wanted to play up front, but Rangnick has been reluctant for that to happen because it means dropping one of the players behind him. And you can see why Ronaldo wants that, because he wants support, because he's not the player that he was. And Cavani, even though he's getting on, he runs and runs and he shows a great spirit. But what use is he if he can never play? So it's another frustration on top of the so many frustrations that we've had so far this season. And see Manchester United in fourth. If they finish fourth, it would be a relative success for this season. At least it gets the team into the Champions League next year. But if I sound downbeat, it's because I am, because it's been such a disappointing season.
And I guess Sunday, is it a no-win scenario in one way? Because a victory puts Liverpool right back in the title race.
Yeah, it's rock and a hard place, isn't it? You speak to Manchester United fans. Cheers for these questions, by the way. And it's like, who do you dislike most, Manchester City or Liverpool? And people will argue about that until the cows come home. No, we can't have City winning it. We've got to be Liverpool. Yeah, but then if Liverpool win it, then they're going to start catching us up. And you have all these emotion tribal arguments. I, as a Manchester United fan, would like to see Manchester United beat City in the Manchester derby, and I don't think I will ever change that. It looks very, very complicated at the moment, and as good as Manchester United have been at the Etihad, City have been so good at Old Trafford, and this season, even though the scoreline wasn't as emphatic as the Liverpool game, they toyed with Manchester United, and that was really worrying to me. And even last season in that semi-final of the League Cup, when Manchester United were on a good run briefly, hit the top of the table, when push really came to shove, City just had the extra to reach yet another cup final, something Manchester United have been struggling to do. And we're coming up to 5 years now without a trophy, so it'd be a good job that United win the Champions League in Paris in May, because it's about time that trophy was won.
All right, on that cheery note, Andy, we leave it there. Great stuff as always.
Thank you.
Andy Mitten there from United We Stand. Of course, all our football coverage is brought to you by Sky, and it is Manchester Derby Day this Sunday. Don't miss City against United, live only on Sky Sports. In the live game tonight, still scoreless between Everton and non-league Bournemouth in the fifth round of the FA Cup. There's 8 minutes gone in the second half at Goodison Park. Up next, we're talking Ireland with Gavin Cooney.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Sky, proud partner and supporter of the Republic of Ireland women's national football team.
This is News Talk.
All right, welcome back. It is Thursday's Off the Ball. Everton have just scored against non-league Bournemouth in the FA Cup. Solomon Rondon with the goal just before the hour mark. That is in the fifth round of the FA Cup at Goodison Park. So Everton leading by a goal to nil. If they go on and they win that, they will play Crystal Palace in the quarterfinals. Liverpool away to either Nottingham Forest or Huddersfield, Middlesbrough against Chelsea, Southampton against Manchester City. Gavin Cooney of the 42 is in studio. How are you?
Very well, Nathan. Thanks very much.
We're going to talk Republic of Ireland because we're thinking there's a lot going on with a lot of Irish players, good and bad, that we haven't really focused on because we have this long follow period of nothingness. And in a couple of weeks' time, We're at some stage over that week between the games against Belgium and Lithuania, we're going to be talking about Irish football of the last 20 years and how it's all gone so horribly wrong and doing that deep dive that we do every time an international thing comes around. And then we go back to our normal life once again. But there is quite a few interesting things. Obviously, Caoimhín Kelleher has taken all the headlines and we're in such a wonderful position as to whether it'll be Kelleher and Bazunu. Like, that is going to be fascinating in so many different ways. Firstly, because it's totally out of Stephen Kenny's hands as to what happens at club level. Like, this could flip by next September, where maybe Liverpool decide Caoimhín Kelleher, you go on loan and he's playing Premier League or high championship football. Maybe Manchester City bring Gavin Bazunu back.
Yeah.
And he's not getting any football. And then in the middle of it all is Mark Travers playing week in, week out in the Premier League next season with Bournemouth.
It's quite conceivable that Travers is the only first choice Irish keeper in the Premier League next year. You know, it's gone quite under the radar. And if we ever ask Stephen Kenny to effectively praise one of his goalkeepers, he lists off the ones that aren't playing. And he always reserves high words of praise for Travers, who has, in fairness to him, bounced back extremely well from the nightmare in Belgrade. You know, he played poorly in that game and got chipped by Mitrovic and quite embarrassingly, and then lost his place to Bazunu against Luxembourg, and the rest for Gavin Bazunu and everyone following the Irish team is history. But Travers has ensured that he hasn't been consigned to history. He's been playing extremely well for Bournemouth. I mean, no one has kept more clean sheets in the Championship than him this season. They look like they have a pretty good shot at promotion. They did recruit a goalkeeper over the January window whose name now escapes me, but you know, you see that and you're wondering, oh no, they're not going to kick Travers out, are they? But no, he's stayed in goal. And he's just been really solid. Like, I won't.
Well, he's been man of the match in four consecutive games.
Yeah, no, he's been great. I mean, I say solid because I don't want to nerd you out too much with statistics. But if you look at the expected goals conceded, the goals that you would expect him to concede, he's outperforming that ever so slightly. Now, not by any massive metric. But he is obviously playing very, very well and has been trusted by Scott Parker and Bournemouth. And, you know, I mean, quite conceivably now will be a regular in the Premier League next year.
Yeah, there's going to be a few tests of Stephen Kenny's selection policy, which by and large I think he's come around to. I'm not going to pay massive attention to club position, but with goalkeeper is definitely one that, even though Bazunu has done nothing, like, he's been an absolute revelation. As we say, if he's not playing first team football for a considerable period, like, God, he's in such a strong position though, with like three of the best young keepers in English football right now.
It's outrageous, you know.
And like, what have we been doing right? Like, we spend so much time talking about what we don't do right in Irish football. Where's the deep dive on what we're doing right with producing all these unbelievable goalkeepers? Is there a guru out there that we don't know about?
Like, we must genuinely be, like, I mean, genuinely, there must be nations in Europe glancing our way and wondering how on earth we're producing all these goalkeepers. And you could say maybe it's typical of Irish football's luck that we have depth in the one position in which you can't play more than one. Unless, obviously, Caoimhín Kelleher came through. And we all read and
still lack goals.
And many of us wrote the features over the weekend of Caoimhín Kelleher formerly being a striker at Ringmahon Rangers. So unless he's repurposed, I was going to say David James style, what Stuart Pearce did with David James, but hopefully with more success at Irish level. But no, Bazunu has the jersey. But it's all circumstance, you know. I mean, Kelleher was probably in line to get that jersey when Randolph was injured at the start of the World Cup qualifying campaign, but was injured at a pretty luckless time. So in came Travers, and then Travers didn't perform against Serbia, so in came Bazunu. He has performed. There's absolutely no reason for Bazunu to come out of the Irish team at the moment. And the fact that Kelleher is there putting so much pressure on him is a good thing, ultimately, in terms of keeping Bazunu on his toes and keeping him at a pretty high level of performance.
We're still 2 weeks away from Stephen Kenny naming a squad for those friendlies against Belgium and Lithuania, and I can't imagine he's going to do a huge amount of rotation. Particularly that Belgium game actually is a huge opportunity for Ireland in terms of world ranking points. If Belgium aren't bringing the big guns, you get a result there, you know, the effects of that can linger for quite a while. Defensively, if he's looking at other options, well, maybe even before we look at the other options, like Shane Duffy has had this massive renaissance, and we celebrated this, and we sort of ignored the fact that for the last 2 months Shane Duffy hasn't been getting the game.
Yeah, stalled a little
come
bit.
Come to a crushing halt.
There have been injuries in there to complicate it, but he did return and play in that awful Brighton 3-0 loss at home to Burnley. Like, I mean, conceding three goals at home to Burnley. And there was a bit of a set too between Shane Duffy and his goalkeeper Robert Sanchez. There was a bit of a very obvious disagreement on the pitch, which earned a mild rebuke from Graham Potter. Now, I think Graham Potter only does mild rebukes. I don't think he goes any further than mild, but did say, yeah, it probably didn't help. But was then on the bench again against in that defeat to Villa most recently. And, you know, they played three centre halves. He was dropped in a team that wasn't exactly laden with centre halves. They had Cucurella, who usually plays left wing back. He played to the left of the back three. And Veltman, who had a terrible game.
Yeah,
came in
that's
and played.
The most worrying part. Cucurella, in fairness, is an unbelievable fullback.
Yeah.
The fact he's been thrown in at centre back and Veltman.
Yeah,
is,
and Webster is injured,
average.
But like, and Dan, you know, Dan Byrne goes to Newcastle, and you write that story from an Irish point of view and say, well, this could be good news for Shane Duffy, but yeah, it has stalled a little bit. Injury has complicated in the last couple of weeks as well, but you would hope that if we're sitting here just before that international window in 2 weeks' time, and he still hasn't re-established himself in the Brighton team, given the paucity of options around him post-Dan Byrne and the post-Dan Byrne era.
They call it Dan Byrne.
I think that's what they're calling it.
Wow. Post-Dan Byrne era.
May you live in interesting times. You would be slightly concerned if he hasn't re-established himself. Because one of the big successes of Kenny's reign last year, or the World Cup qualification campaign, was the effective rehabilitation of Duffy.
A couple of other defensive options. Again, he's not massively looking, but Omar Bamidele is injured and probably going to miss out on these games. John Egan is in, it seems, good form with Sheffield United, who just cannot concede a goal at the moment. Mark McGuinness and Joel Bagan are two guys at Cardiff who are probably a little bit out of sight, out of mind, but two young players who are, got to think they're possibly in the mix for this squad.
Yeah, I mean, Stephen might have to ring Mick McCarthy to thank him for his work. You know, Joel Bagan played underage, was born in England, played underage with Scotland, but declared for Ireland beginning of last year, I think. Jim Crawford rang Mick McCarthy and said, oh yeah, you know, get him on board. You're getting a terrific player. And he's been playing regularly in the last couple of months. In a back four, as far as I remember. But he's been also scoring goals. Mm. Like, he scored in three straight championship games earlier on this year. One absolutely terrific goal, I think, was against Coventry, I think, where he cut in and fired it into the far corner. So he's doing pretty well. You'd be surprised if he makes the squad, probably. I mean, he's probably more likely to stay with the 21s. But we're not exactly stocked with options at, you know, left wing back. I mean,
Looked as though Enda Stevens, a year, 18 months ago, that was his position for the foreseeable. He had a few injury problems as well, and now it felt as though McLean is probably
the eternal James McLean. Like, I mean, you know, people have been
the season of his life.
People have been writing his international career obituary for a while. I remember he got sent off against Wales in the Nations League in Dublin, and, you know, I remember being asked, is that it now for James McLean's international career? But it's not, you know. I mean, he's going to push pretty close to 100 caps. He's on 70 odd now at the moment. And he's been playing really well for Wigan. Now, you know, McLean, quite refreshingly this week, inverted the old Instagram apology by posting on Instagram and say, I have absolutely no apologies to make for being sent off against Fleetwood. I don't know
if you love his Instagram. If you don't follow James McGrath on Instagram, you really should. His most impressive feat is that, obviously, he's playing League One, which, like the Championship, is Sunday, Tuesday, and it, you know, 42 games, yet still, every Tuesday night after he plays, he's up at 1 o'clock in the morning doing the most
incredible,
insane fitness regime.
It's absolutely remarkable. And he got into a bit of a tiff with Joe Garner. He used to play for Rangers with Fleetwood. What did McLean say? It was like he tried to like kick me and drag me and do something else. He tried all three, so I was going to stand my ground effectively. So he's going to miss the next three matches, but he has been playing, you know, in a very good Wigan team. Yeah, he scored again. Scored. Is it 8 goals, I think, this season? But he's been playing, you know, he's been versatile for them as well. Has been left back in the back four, has been left wing back, has played like on the left wing and traditional attack as well. So he's had a great season, you know. So you've got those two and Liam Scales probably for doing the depth chart for a left wing back. So that's probably maybe Bagan will struggle to force his way in. Ryan Manning is there as well, but he's been repurposed as a centre back at Swansea.
Also, when he has had the chance with Ireland, really doesn't feel like it's worked out for him so far. So maybe he's a little bit down that depth chart. Looking at the midfielders, I know what the next couple of weeks is going to be about. It'll be the Jack Byrne hype train, particularly if he can follow up on the type of performance he put in on Monday night. And yes, maybe there is an opportunity even at that early stage, even though, even listening to Jack Byrne and Steve Bradley feels
a bit early. I was going to ask because you were at that game.
A little bit too early.
Like, do you think?
I think it's probably a little bit too early. Like, the quality is, like, there's no questioning the quality. But the fact he was taken off after 55 minutes because he had played on Friday suggests that, like, what, four games in about a year that he's played. So to suddenly get to international level in a month, it is difficult to tell the difference in standards. I was thinking afterwards of somebody like Alan Brown, who's playing, you know, a year older than Jack Bird, playing every week in the championship, and you know, we never get excited about Alan Brown,
yeah,
no matter what he does. But Jack has these moments, and he's always looking to do something, and maybe that's his downfall as well. That every time he gets on, he's trying to maybe force the issue a little bit, and say he was frustrated with, he gave the ball away a little bit too much, but also like the other side of it was the pass, and there was three or four of those.
Brilliant, like
the pass for Gannon for the first goal. There was a similar one for Andy Lyons. Where Andy Lyons never made the run, and you could see he was at Andy Lyons because he knows actually all Andy Lyons needs to do is get in there once, and we have the exact same thing again. So he is already, it seems, several steps ahead of maybe anybody else.
But
in the League of Ireland.
But what you say there about him trying, always trying to make something happen, that was actually kind of a criticism that Mick McCarthy used to have on him, that he used to come too deep. You know, his thing was he wanted Jack further up the field and playing in that, you know, more number 10 position. Like the Ireland team, how they were set up last year, didn't really play with a traditional number 10, largely because they lacked them. They really didn't have those kind of players. Jamie McGrath came in and played off the left, I suppose, and could occasionally play deeper in midfield. So it would be interesting. If Jack is back playing regularly with Shamrock Rovers, he is an option. He's 100% an option for Ireland in that position. But you see, there are also others that are beginning to come to the fore. Like, I mean, Conor Ronan. Ronan was, you know, one of the main players for Kenny at under 21 level. You might remember he was brilliant. Was it Sweden at home? He was brilliant. And there was the clip went slightly viral. Great, like, drag back and skill to beat a man by the end line, and Troy Parrott reacted by like putting his head in his hands. So Ronan was like quite an important player then, but he kind of faded from the radar. He went to Grasshoppers in Switzerland, but he decided to join them at one stage as well. Yeah, they were in the Swiss second division. I remember Kenny talking about we're kind of disappointed at the level he's playing at, but he's at St Mirren now and is playing pretty well. He too was sent off recently, so he won't be playing against Celtic in their match coming up, but he's doing pretty well there as well. And Kenny name checked him last December as a player that they're very much keeping an eye on. So they're now, you know, there are now options in that kind of central.
Will Smallbone's an interesting player. He's been around for a while, even though he's still not a 21. He definitely looked like the class act in 21's last game. And he's had some health issues as well over the last couple of years. But he's always been in and around at Southampton. Like, so he's at a good level. Like, it does feel he's not far away from, like, been very close to that team.
I think he's probably pretty close. I mean, the thing that would hold him back from being named in March is just probably not playing enough games. But he did play. He did start in midweek. Like, he's a very, very talented midfielder. He had a really rough time. He ruptured his ACL and then suffered from alopecia at the same time. So, well, I think the alopecia was onset just before the injury. So he talked. I mean, I recommend people go back and dig out the interview. It's very interesting. He talks very openly about, you know, the slight trauma of seeing all of his hair fall out as he was recovering from this very, very serious injury that was stymieing his career. And he talked about the doctors don't know whether they were related. Maybe they were, maybe they weren't. But he's back on the pitch. His hair is growing back now. It's kind of further symbolism of the fact that he's working his way back to fitness. And Kenny has talked about him before as well. He talked about him, it's going back to 2020, I think, and talked about just him needing physicality to get himself back in the mix. But he earned the praise of Ralph Hasenhüttl for his performance against West Ham in midweek. So if you can just string a few games together, I wouldn't be surprised to see him in the mix.
A couple of other names that maybe are just below the radar. Danny McNamara, Marcus Harness. What's their story?
Again, two players that Kenny name-checked as being on the radar last December. Marcus Harness, quite a memorable name. He was born in England, I think. He declared for Ireland back in Mick McCarthy's days. He's never been technically named in a squad by Kenny, but he was with the group around the Nations League game against Bulgaria at home in November. That's arguably
we'll
the
never
most
forget
memorable
it.
Thing about that game. My God. It was another 0-0, believe it or not. But he's been playing pretty well for Portsmouth in League One. Like, he was originally a winger, but has been converted into like another number 10. Like, I mean, striker maybe of the Will Keane ilk, who drops deep in links play and can also play at right wing back. So he's been in reasonable goal scoring form as well. Scoring that great 3-3 comeback for Portsmouth against Fleetwood there at the weekend. And sorry, there was someone else that we mentioned.
Well, there is an option, just so, because we're short in time. There is a spot available, certainly if not in the starting 11, in or around it with Adam Eda's injury in that attacking position. And I don't want to say Troy Parrott is a forgotten man because he's still only 20 and he's still a Tottenham player. He's only out on loan, but the hype has certainly died down around Troy Parrott. But actually, in the last month or so, the vibes coming out of MK Don seem to be really positive.
Yeah, the hype dying down is no bad thing. Mm. Like he went on loan from Tottenham to Millwall, and Tottenham are very careful about managing the hype. Like I remember once I was talking to a journalist who tried to arrange an interview with him at Millwall, and one of the things off the table, you're not allowed to ask about Harry Kane, because obviously Kane went to Millwall and then went back to Spurs. So that was managing the hype. Things kind of went off track for him a bit, but he's playing all the time now in League One with MK Dons. He's not, his numbers aren't amazing, like 3 goals and 3 assists this season. But Liam Manning, his manager, has been hailing his work ethic, which seems to have turned around in the last few weeks. He was sent off in a Papa John's pizza trophy competition, and Liam Manning kind of criticised his lack of maturity for that. But he's very much on track, and his work ethic is being praised at the moment. So
should we be concerned about the temperament of young Irish footballers? I don't know. Every second player has been sent off in the last couple of weeks.
You know, it shows that they care, I suppose. You know?
Though I am concerned that Troy Parrott has gone from being the boy wonder to suddenly becoming a typical Irish striker who, you know, works very hard but doesn't really score too many goals.
I know, it's a concerning development. Yeah, I mean, obviously there is the Robbie Keane. Well, people drew like Robbie Keane comparisons because they played for Tottenham, yeah. I think.
They should have banned that comparison along with the Harry Kane comparison. Harry Kane one, yeah. Gav, thanks a million for coming in.
Cheers.